la 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 ya la 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 ya la 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 ya la 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 ya la 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 ya la 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 ya la ya la la ya la 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 ya la la ya la 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 ya la ya la 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 ya la ya la la ya la 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 shkach. Okay, so we're holding in Shoftim what the Christians delineated as the ninth chapter. You guys know that the chapters throughout most of Tanakh are a Christian invention. So we'll borrow their terminology and we'll call it the ninth chapter. And what we had learned was about, who remembers? What Shofet did we just learn about? Gidon. And you remember what Gidon's nickname was? Yeru Baal. Very good. Yarev Baal. Gidon had went and had this magnificent victory against the Midianites. And Gidon had 70 children. He had a Pilegesh in Shechem. And from her he had a son named Avimelech, which has to make us wonder, how come Gidon's giving his son a non-Jewish name? And Gidon passes away, and the Jews initially had told him, Mishol bonu gam ato gam bincho gam ben binecho, you should be king over us, your son, your grandson. And Gidon had answered them, Lo emshol ani bachem, velo emshol beni bachem, Hashem yimshol bachem. I won't be ruler over you, nor will my son. Hashem should be your ruler. But the Jewish people didn't treat his family too kindly, as we will see in our learning today. So Avimelech goes to Shechem, to his family, and he tells them, talk to the people of Shechem. Who knows who's going to be king? What do you need? All the 70 kids of my father, they should rule over you. You should have one king. And remember, I'm one of you. So his family, his brothers from his mother, they tell the people, they tell them these things, and they convince them that it's a good idea to ensure that Avimelech becomes king. Now, here you see classical politician. There's no problem, but he has to make people panic that there might be a problem so that they need him to solve the problem. There wasn't any problem. No one was going to be king. No one was thinking of being king. But he's telling the people, you know, what do you need all 70 kids to be king over you? Why don't you have one king? And remember, I'm from you. So they give him 70 silver coins and they take it from their house of worship, their house of idol worship. And he hires some empty people and he comes to his father's house, and together with these people he grabs all his brothers and he kills all of Gidon's children. He slaughters them on one stone, and Gidon had 70 kids. He slaughtered all of them. There was only the little one who knew how to hide. In life, it's good to know how to hide. Lecha mi bo v'chaderecha. The little one knew how to hide. You got to know how to play hide and seek in life. Very important. Sometimes it could save your life. Chazal say, Chavi kimat rega ad yavo zam. The Navi tells us, hide for a minute till the time of anger passes. In life, you have to know how to hide. So this little one, he knew how to hide. Yotam. And the people of Shechem gather, Shechem and the neighboring town of Milo, they gather to anoint Avimelech as king. And Yotam hears that they've gathered, so he goes to the top of Mount Gerizim. Who remembers what was Mount Gerizim? That was the mountain that what? Yeah, Baruch? Higher Gerizim was the mountain on top of which the tribes that said blessing, they were standing on top of. And Yotam stands on top of the mountain and he calls out and he says, listen, you masters of Shechem, and let God hear you. And he starts telling them a mashal. He's telling them an allegory, and he's obviously got a point. He's telling them the following story. The trees decided they want to anoint the king above, that he should be king on them. So they went to the olive tree and they said, you be king over us. And the olive tree said, what, have I stopped serving God and mankind? That's what I have to do now, just give shade to all the other trees. So they went to the fig tree and they said, you be king over us. And the fig tree said, do I no longer have any sweet fruits, any bounty to give. That's what I'm supposed to do now, just give shade and wave over the other trees. So the trees went to the grapevine and they said, you be king over us. And the grapevine said, have I ceased to give my delicious wine that makes God and mankind happy? That's what I should do now, to go and just give shade to the other trees. So all the trees went to the thorn bush and they said, you be king over us. And the thorn bush said, if you're sincere that you want to anoint me as king, come all of you and rest in my shade. Now thorn bush doesn't have so much shade, it's got no leaves. And if not, if you said it in jest, then you know what a thorn bush is good for. You use it for making a fire. It's dry wood. So let the fire come out of the thorn bush and destroy all the trees up to the great cedar trees of Lebanon. And now, says Yotam, if what you did was in sincerity, that you appointed Abimelech as king over you, and if your thought was, we want to do good with the house of Gidon, and what you've done was in good faith to the house of Gidon, you paid him back the way he did for you, so you know my father fought for you guys and he risked his life for you and saved you guys all from Midian, and you arose today and killed all his children, 70 children on one stone, and here we see that in Tanakh round numbers, because they didn't kill 70, if then they killed 69, right? They didn't kill Yosam. Right? Assuming that there were 70 plus Avimelech. Even so, they killed 69. So here you see that the Navi sometimes rounds. We know that Torah rounds from 39 to 40. And here the Navi seems to round from 69 to 70. We also know that the Torah seems to have rounded off Moshe Rabbeinu's age, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was 80 years old when he stood before Paro, and it took 1 year until they left Egypt. So he was 81 when they left Egypt. And we were 40 years in the desert, so he should have died at 121. So that shows you that somewhere over there, the Torah rounded off a number. So Avimelech tells them, you arose today, killed 70, my father's 70 children on one stone, and you anointed as king Avimelech, the son of his maid. And the only reason you did it is because he's your brother. Now, if you've done this in good faith, so if you've been fair with Avimelech and his house, so be happy with Avimelech and let him be happy with you. But if not, then may a fire come out of Avimelech and consume you, and may a fire come out of you and consume Avimelech. And then he ran away. He was scared for his life. So Avimelech is king, and the Navi uses a term that he was king over the Jewish people for 3 years, which makes us wonder, was he the first king the Jewish people had? The simple reading is that he was. We don't have such an indication from Chazal, so we'll assume it doesn't mean literally he was king over the people of Israel. And then God made Yosam's curse come true, and there was a bad spirit between Avimelech and the people of Shechem, and they rebelled against Avimelech. And really God was paying back Avimelech for his brothers that he had murdered. And God was going to pay back the people of Shechem for giving him the power to murder his brothers. So they started making ambushes for Avimelech's men. And then a non-Jew named Gaal ben Evit, came with his brothers, and the people of Shechem liked him. So they went out to harvest their grapes, and what they always did when they'd harvest their grapes is they'd make a party. Now they're having a lot of grape juice and wine. So they made parties, and they came to their house of idol worship, and they're eating, and they're drinking. And what happens when people eat and drink? They curse. Why? What do we do when we eat and drink? We say Shevach. We say praise. Why do we say Zmiros? What's the whole idea of Purim? To show what happened when Haman and Nachashverosh drank? They murdered. They start making decrees. Let's kill. They called in to bring their women with in an immodest fashion. They start speaking about which women are more beautiful. What happens when we eat and drink on Purim? We sing praise. We sing praise to Hashem. We show that we're performing mitzvot. Yes?
The people who went to the idol worship were Jews?
Okay, so that's a very good question. For the last decade, I've been wondering that question. I haven't found conclusive proof one way or another. The next pasuk seems to indicate that all the people of Shechem were not Jewish. Because the next pasuk says that Gaal, who was not Jewish, said to the people of Shechem, why should we serve Avimelech? Let's go back to our roots, to Hamor, the father of Shechem, who was the original king of Shechem. Now he was originally the king of Shechem the time Yaakov Avinu. You remember Hamor, who was, the, so to speak, the father of the people of Shechem, right? You had in the time Yaakov Avinu, there was Hamor and Shechem. They were the kings of Shechem at the time. Hamor was the king, Shechem was the prince. Shechem abducted Dinah. So Gaal tells the people of Shechem, let's go back to our roots and appoint a king from the aristocratic family, from the family of Hamor. So I don't know if they really had those roots there, but if they were all Jewish, then why is Gaal telling them, let's appoint a king from the non-Jewish aristocracy of the area of Shechem? It doesn't sound right. So it seems that they weren't Jewish. But I've been wondering this for quite a few years, and I haven't yet had the time to look into it enough, but the amount I was able to look into it, I didn't see any clear indication. We killed off the men. What about the women? What about the people who weren't there? How many people ran away when Shechem walked in and said, everyone's going to circumcise? You think everyone stuck around and said, sure, why not me? I'm willing to bet many of them ran off into the hilltops. It doesn't say it, but you have to wonder. So maybe some of them were away visiting their in-laws. Maybe some of them were away out in the field. You never know. I mean, I'm sure there were people who were looking for excuses not to be there. Yeah, they're making a mass circumcision. You have to wonder what people stuck around for it. I mean, it's really a wondrous story when you think about it. King walks in and says, tomorrow everyone's just cutting it, doing a... And it's not a simple operation. Take it from a moel. I'm telling you, it's not simple. And they couldn't have thought it was simple. So the question is, who did stick around to do it? So the Torah seems to say they all stuck around and did it. But the question is, does it mean literally? I don't know. So back to Gaal ben Eved. Gaal says, let's appoint a king from the ancestry of aristocracy of Shechem, from Hamor. And if only I were the one who were running the show here, Gaal says, I'd remove Avimelech, and I tell Avimelech, gather up your armies, let's see you. So the governor of the city, he's been appointed by Avimelech. So he hears Gaal talking this way, so he's upset. He's riling the people up against the king, he's his officer there. So he sends word to Avimelech, and he tells him, you know, Gaal ben Eved came with his brothers here, and they're getting the city riled up against you. So if you want to avoid a rebellion, you come here tonight, bring with you whatever soldiers you have, prepare an ambush, and when the sun comes up, so the people are going to head out to harvest their grapes again, so you'll see him come out with all the people, so catch him and do what makes sense to you. So Avimelech listens, and that night he comes, and they prepare an ambush on four sides of the city. And when Gaal ben Eved comes out, and he's standing by the gates of the city, so Avimelech gets up from their ambush. So Gaal looks out, and now the governor Zvul figured he'll come and see what's happening. So he stands by the city gates, together with Gaal, and they're looking out, and they see a dark mass moving out as the sun is rising. So Gaal says to Zvul, I think I see people coming down the mountain. I see a black mass moving down the mountain. So Zvul tells him, no, that's the shadow moving. As the sun rises, the shadow of the mountain moves. Well, you see that black mass moving, that's not people, that's the shadows moving. So Gaal looks and looks, and he says, no, those are people. I see people, and one of them is coming. I see one of them. And Zvul tells him, where's your mouth now? That's the people who you were disgraced with. That's the people that you said that they're, you wish you could take them on. Now let's see you. Go out and fight with them. So Gaal leads the people of Shechem, and he fights Avimelech, and Avimelech wins. And the Avimelech chases the people of Shechem, killing people all the way to the city gates. Now let's pause for a second, and let's retrace this story. How did Avimelech become king? Because he came to the people of Shechem and said, careful, who knows what will happen if there will be a king who's not your brother? Who knows what will happen? Was there any danger of anyone being king? No. Would any of the other brothers have done anything close to what Avimelech did? There's good reason to think that not. But Avimelech was a good politician. So one of the things we have to learn from here is when a politician tells you, you have to panic, there's a danger, you have to stop and think. Do I really have to panic? Or does he want me to do something? You see that Avimelech got them all panicked, and really he brought the problems. And we see that many times in politics. If you look at politics, look at the political scene, I mean, I don't want to go into politics, but look at any political scene, you'll see that this is a classical political ploy. Get the people all riled up, there's a danger, we have to do something, and then You do something, and if it backfires, it doesn't matter because you've already gotten them riled up. You've gotten your position. That's what's important. So Avimelech is murdering people of Shechem till the city gates. And Zvul, who's the governor, now he has more power. Until now he couldn't do anything, but now that Avimelech is there, so he kicks Gaal ben Eved and his family out from Shechem. The next morning, the people figure, okay, now that Gaal isn't here, Avimelech, he's going to come kill his own people? So they go out to harvest again. So Avimelech hears that they've gone out. So Avimelech prepares an ambush. And he, when they go out of the city, he enters with his ambush into the city. And he leaves soldiers outside to kill all the people that went out. Avimelech captures the city from within. And he kills everyone. All the people of Shechem he kills. And he destroys the city. And then he plants the city with salt. So it shouldn't be able to... That's a way of ensuring you can't re-inhabit the city. Now, there was a place called Migdal Shechem. They had some kind of tower which was well fortified. So they went to their... This tower was by their place of worship, of idol worship. So they went there. And Avimelech hears that they went there. So he cuts down trees. And he tells his people, you guys cut down trees with me. They surround this tower with trees. And they burn the people alive inside the tower. They burn pretty cruel. Now think about it. What did Yotam curse them? Yotam said, just like the thorn bush, a fire should come out from me and burn all of you. And that's what's happening so far. Then Avimelech goes on to the city of Tevetz. And there again they had a tower. They're climbing up the tower. And Avimelech figures he'll do the same thing. So there was a woman who was climbing up, and she had a large piece of a stone, a large piece of a mill. And she throws it down from the window, and it bashes Avimelech's head. And Avimelech sees that his skull is bashed, he is about to die. So he tells his lad, draw your sword and kill me, so people shouldn't say about me that I was killed by a woman. So his lad says, fine, he draws his sword and kills him. And then the soldiers see that Avimelech's dead, they have no interest in fighting this war. So they all go home, and we see that the curse of Yosam came true. That the people of Shechem were paid back for their evil doing, for their supporting Avimelech and murdering his brothers, and Avimelech was paid back. And then the Navi goes through a few Navim quickly. We have Tola ben Pua, who judged us for 23 years, and then Ya'ir HaGiladi for 22 years, and the Navi tells us some fantastic things about his wealth, and then the Jews continue sinning. And they're looking for different idols to worship. So Hashem gives the Jews into the hands of the Plishtim and the hands of Ammon, and they oppress us for 18 years. And the Jews are really suffering, so they call out to Hashem. They say, we've sinned, take us back. And Hashem says, I did so many things to you. I saved you from so many nations, and you keep leaving me, going for other nations. Go call the gods you believe in now. Let them save you. And the Jews say, no, we've sinned. Hashem, please help us out. Please save us today. And they do tshuva. They remove the idols from their midst. And the Navi uses a term which we have to remember. V'tikzal nafsho ba'amal Yisrael. Hashem says, I can't handle this anymore. And that's something Hashem treats us like a father. If you ever want to fight your kids, you should know you've lost before you start. They're much more powerful than you. Because kids have no compunctions of fighting you. And you have every compunction about fighting your kid. So if you're ever going to try to fight your kid of power of wills, remember they're stronger than you. So when they're 5 years old, you can still outsmart them and win the fight. When they're 15 years old, assume that you cannot win. Now you have to figure out how to win without winning. But if you're going to go head on, so kids are always stronger than the parents. Parent says, I don't want you to keep mitzvahs. And kid says, I want to. Parent says, you're not going to keep Shabbos. And kid says, I will. So the parent can force his hand for a week or 2 weeks. And eventually the kid says, okay, Dad, I'm leaving. So the father says, what do you mean? Where are you going to live? I don't know. I'll live in a shelter. I'll live somewhere where they let me keep Shabbos. You don't want to let me keep Shabbos. I'm not living here. So what's the father going to do? Lock him up in the room? The kids are always stronger than us because they're willing to walk out and close the door. Kids have no compunctions about pulling their hand, about drawing their hand and going strong against the parents. Parents, on the other hand, they have everything to lose. Parents will not do that. So when you guys are parents, you have to remember, when you take on your kids, if there's going to be an issue, remember at the onset that they have the upper hand. So now it's just a question of, well, how could you make this work even though they do have the upper hand? That doesn't mean you have to give in to everything. kid walks in and says, "Dad, I'm getting a tattoo. I'm putting an earring in my left ear and a nose ring in my nose." Father could say, "Sure, son, have a good time." Or father could say, "I don't think that's a good idea. Let's sit down and talk. Where'd you get that from?" Okay, so we don't have to give in to everything. But we do have to know that, like Hashem says, initially Hashem says, go talk to the other gods, don't talk to me. You believed in them, now ask them to help you. But bottom line, when we were suffering, Hashem says, I can't handle this. So the Jews gather to fight us. They've gathered on the eastern side of the Jordan in a place called Gilad, a place where the Jews didn't have such a good educational system. In Gilad, there were many Jewish murderers. But the Ammonites gathered there, and the Jews have gathered. And the Jews ask themselves, who's going to help us to fight the Ammonites? The Ammonites have come on the eastern side of the Jordan. Who's going to help us out? And Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, or the following week, whenever we get to learn next, we will pick up over here with the story of Yiftach, who comes from the area of Gilad, who was from a foreign woman. And when the man named Gilad had a son who he named Yiftach, the brothers chased him out of the territory, and the elders didn't come and help him out. And he's become a pretty powerful warrior, and the Jews basically think he should lead them to war against the Ammonites. And when they come and ask him for help, he says, "Wait a second. You backed my brothers illegitimately. They had no right halachically to chase me out of town. So what if I'm from another woman? I'm entitled to inherit my father. And you, the elders, you should have backed me and you didn't. How come now that you need me, you're coming to me?" And Yiftach is going to take an approach which is completely opposite to the approach of Gideon. You remember Gideon said, "I'm not going to be king." And Yiftach, before he even picks up a finger, says, "I will only come help you on the condition that when I win, I will be king." And that is the beginning of our story of Yiftach. We already see a totally different leader than Gideon. A leader that says, "I'm going to run the show here." The exact opposite of Gideon's modest approach, where Gideon said, "I won the war, God helped me win the war, but there's no reason I should run the show." And Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll pick up with Yiftach next time.